Here we go, here we go. One day I plotted corn on a misty Sunday morn. I had to miss church. What the preacher don't know won't hurt. I saw me a spike, but I wanted a big buck. And then all of a sudden, Dot pulled up in a truck. I said I saw me a deer, and it was really many. By the way,
welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Now, I have said this before. When it comes to Wisconsin culture, sports, all in. A lot of outdoorsy stuff, all in. Hunting, fishing. I've maybe shot skeet twice. The last time I caught a fish, I think I was 10. I'm also the girl who probably wouldn't kill a mouse if I found one in my house and I would try to relocate it, like Albert the squirrel. But hunting is a huge part of Wisconsin culture. So here to teach Jane and I a little bit more about why bow hunting is gaining popularity and everything to do with hunting and fishing, and he may have even brought us some exotic tasty treats to try, is the foremost authority on Wisconsin's outdoors. He is the Midwest host of the national television show The Fowl Life. He appears regularly on The Wild Game Chef on Ted Nugent's, as a Wild Game Chef on Ted Nugent's Spirit of the Wild. And of course, he is also the host of Raised in Wisco, which he records right from this same studio in Waukesha, WAUK, but it airs across the Civic Nation, Civic Media Network. Joel Clayfish,
hey,
in the studio.
It's great to be here.
Thanks for coming.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So, I don't even know where to start. We were already in commercial, just yammering away. So, I guess let's start, because we're in bow hunting season now.
Yes, yes,
it's already started.
Right? It's full swing. The rut's about here. Do you know what the rut is, Kristen?
No, I don't even know what that is.
The rut is the breeding season.
Frisky. And
did Jane say risky?
Frisky. Frisky.
Oh, frisky. I thought she meant it was a risky topic. Well, yeah, it's she's right. That's when the bucks start chasing the does, and early on, they kind of fight each other for territory, and they start chasing the does around, and it's when the breeding goes on, and let's just say the bucks out there are a little less less nervous about things. They're running around a little bit like chickens with their heads cut off, that's for sure, and that's why so many of the big bucks are harvested during the rut season of the archery season.
So they're distracted, basically.
Well, yeah, I like to say it's kind of like guys at a bar who've had a few drinks. That's what it reminds me of. They're not as careful as they usually are. I mean, big bucks get to be big bucks because they're not stupid, and they're very careful with where they go and tread and what they smell. But during the rut, it's your chance to potentially catch them a little off guard. Let's just say that, because they are preoccupied with the breeding season.
And how long does the breeding season last?
Oh, it's about 3 to 4 weeks.
Okay, so it's basically over by the time deer hunting season with guns starts.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the whole goal. So, obviously, archery is a much more difficult proposition to kill a deer than a gun. I mean, a gun, you can aim at 300 yards, three football fields, pull a trigger, and have a pretty decent chance of harvesting a deer. During the bow season, I mean, most people are shooting their bows 20 to 45 yards at the most. So, you've got, it's an up-close and personal sport. There's no doubt about it. You've got to be close enough to that deer to take a safe, ethical shot with your archery equipment. And archery equipment spans the gamut. Now, with some of the new crossbows, you're definitely lengthening the efficacy range because crossbows shoot up to 100 yards. Some of the newer crossbows, some of the technology shoots up to 100 yards. And of course, in Wisconsin, you can use a crossbow during the archery season.
Got it. Okay. And so is the, because the whole reason why this started, why I was like, when I, because I saw the WPR article about the rising popularity this year specifically with bow hunters and having more licenses. There's been, the DNR has given out. And so is it, what do you think attributes to that?
Well, first of all, while COVID was horrifying and horrible for everybody across the board, One thing that happened is it got a lot of people back into the outdoors. What can you do that you're going to be more than 6 feet away from people? You're not going to be spreading your germs to anyone else. You go into the woods, you go into a field, and you hunt. So hunting kind of had a rebirth during COVID. That was one thing. Number two, food is the great equalizer, is it not? Don't we all love to eat? Doesn't every Wisconsinite love to eat? Food is my favorite dish. That's right. And it's the great equalizer. And what's happened is we've seen that in the hunting community, and in the culinary community, they've really become one now. The popularity of eating wild game from an organic source is extremely popular, whether your philosophy is on the right, whether it's on the left. And what we've seen is kind of both sides of the political spectrum, if you will, kind of bending around and saying, look, we have an organic eating source that we can harvest by ourselves. And I'm excluding vegans from that. Okay. If you're a vegan and that's the lifestyle you practice, that's fine, and you don't eat meat whatsoever. If you're like the majority of Wisconsinites and Americans, and you're eating cheese and you're eating meat, well, what is kind of the most ethical way to harvest game? To go into the woods and try to harvest something that's lived free its entire life, or to go to a store and buy meat mm-hmm. that was born to be raised to be slaughtered, which I have no problem with. That's great. But I think we find common ground in that. And as people realize that they can take wild game and turn it into culinary delights and deliciousness, I think we're finding real common ground across political philosophies. And it's just a great area for the state to come together and utilize what we have as great natural resources better than any other state in the country.
Our guest this half hour is Joel Kleefisch, talking all things hunting, fishing, and we got some food to try at the next segment. But, and that was actually is exactly what you just said. So is your philosophy of if you, once you kill an animal, big, small, do you use every part of it for one thing or another?
Well, I one of the most fun things for me is making sure to utilize whatever I kill in the best, most ethical fashion you can. I am not a supporter of going out there just to kill things. Okay. I do have great respect for a beautiful trophy or a taxidermist who turns it into art to be a memorable piece after you kill it. But I think you should eat what you kill. Eating what you kill is the provider lifestyle that we talk about. Being a provider, going into the woods. And, you know, women aged 18 to 35 are the largest growing group of new hunters in the United States. Women aged 18 to 35. So we are really seeing a burgeoning area of hunting in women, in youth. And that is my very favorite thing, taking people who have never hunted before, getting them out in the field and getting them to experience it.
Well, because in the commercial, what I found out, so my good friend of the show, she's been on multiple times, Jessie Opoyan, told me how excited she was when we posted our social media. What's coming on today on the show? She goes, I love that you have Joel coming on. And what you told me is that you took Jessie.
Yes, I did. It's got to be 7-8 years ago now. And she had never hunted and she was interested in doing a piece. And we were talking about how political philosophies kind of fade away now in the modern era of mm-hmm. hunting for organic food and stick bows and recurves and all that type of thing. And she said, geez, I'd like to go hunting and have it be part of the story. And she did. She got a buck. She shot a buck. She did.
Wow.
Yeah. It wasn't a huge one. If I dug through my pictures on my Google Photos, I could probably find a picture of it, but she did.
Did she take it home and cook it and eat it? Or did you help her with that?
I think she did end up eating quite a bit of it. I think she actually ate it for a year or two, because every once in a while I'd see on her Twitter, or she'd be talking about it in the press room at the Capitol, back when I worked at the Capitol, that she had made the venison in some way. And yeah, it's fantastic. That's exactly what we're talking about. Because if somebody goes in the outdoors, even on a hunting expedition, and I do a lot of scouting. I mean, I take very high pride in giving the person I'm going with the best shot at actually harvesting something. But the beauty of hunting is you don't have to harvest something to have a successful hunt. If you're with someone else and you're whispering, half the time your stomach is sore because you're laughing while you're out there and experiencing sunrises and sunsets. Everybody who sleeps through the sunrise, 50% of their entire life, the morning is gone and they don't see the beauty of these sunrises, and listening to the woods wake up is really magical, especially in Wisconsin and all the different species we have. You mix that with foraging. You've got folks who pick mushrooms and different types of fungi out there, along with some of the wild plants that we have in Wisconsin. You can make a complete meal out of the woods of Wisconsin. And if you don't harvest something, you still have a chance to enjoy it.
That's so interesting. So is there a different type of thrill on depending on what you're hunting or fishing?
I think that there is definitely a different type of thrill. So for me, the thrill is one-upping Mother Nature, because Mother Nature, well, Mother Nature is very, very instinctive. And so turkeys see like the Dickens. I mean, they can see so well and they can hear so well, but they can't smell very well. Okay. So now everybody says if a turkey could smell, you'd never kill one, because you don't have to worry about playing the wind when you hunt turkeys. Deer, on the other hand, they smell phenomenally. If you're hunting wild hogs, they smell phenomenally. They can smell, plants growing under the ground at 3 to 4 feet under dirt. So you have to kind of, every species has its different advantages and disadvantages. And when you set up a goose spread or a duck spread with decoys that are not moving and they're made out of plastic, what you're doing is trying to fool those geese or ducks coming in into believing their buddies are down on the ground, and they're confident enough in that and your calling that they're going to come within close enough range to kill with a shotgun, which is efficacy is only about 30 or 40 yards. So there is a different type of thrill with each of it, but I also think two things. I think number one, part of that thrill for me is the eating of the game, of the harvested wild game. It's the excitement of seeing somebody else experiencing the outdoors and bringing that harvest from field to table. And if that disappears, then it's time to hang up the hunting clothes, because being in Wisconsin's outdoors, whether you're hiking, kayaking, mountain climbing, harvesting animals, fishing, and you're putting it on the table, at the end of the day, when you're eating something you harvested from scratch, you, of your own effort, went out there, fooled Mother Nature into believing to get close enough to you that you were able to harvest it. There are a few feelings that are as satisfying as that.
Joel, I am with you on everything, and I would totally...
Here's the but. I can hear it coming, Jane.
I would totally go out with you. It is the dressing of the animal.
Sure.
Which is just like, ew.
Well, let me... Well, in life, Jane, there are necessary evils, I guess. And I'm not going to sit here and say it's so awesomely fun to gut a deer. That is a fact. But I will tell you, if you go with somebody experienced, they're going to have ways in which they're able to do it that are kind of the least gross way. Does that make sense? And I've become kind of pretty good at gutting a deer or cleaning or butchering wild game animals. And in fact, with geese, I'll go so far as I take the breast out of the geese, and that's the part that I utilize from the geese. And then we've actually taken the down out of a goose, dried it, sanitized it, and then you can use it for pillows or you can use it for crafts. But I've gone so far this season as to taking the livers out to make goose liver pate.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Which, you know, is extremely expensive if you buy it at a restaurant. But, and I'm not going to lie to you, hunting can be an expensive sport after you buying the guns and the ammo and the decoys and the gear and everything else. And that's why when you get into hunting, go to somebody who does it, go to somebody who's experienced, and ask them to take you out. Because if you're a true hunter and an ethical person who loves the outdoors of Wisconsin, what you want more than anything is look somebody in the face and say, let's go out there together, and I'm going to help you harvest your first animal, and I'm going to teach you what to do with it after you get it, and I'm going to show you how to put it on the table.
We have to go to break soon, but I everything you're saying, I get, because I've always thought, even though as someone who's not a hunter, that you think about the ethical ways of being a meat eater, but not being able to have the courage to be the person who kills the meat. And the divide of that, of the things that we are nice and clean and ready to go and made for us that we have no problem doing. And then to have the moral standing that somehow the people who are doing that are wrong. I think you and I can see eye to eye on that.
I think you just hit on a quintessentially important point of this whole discussion. And that is, while Jane brought up the fact that the gutting or the cleaning of the animal is the tough part, I think sometimes it's good and okay to go through that tough part, because it's good for us to see what actually happens to an animal before it ends up on the dinner table. And I tell people, I have people say to me, do you have remorse? You know, sometimes anti-hunters will look at me and they'll say, well, do you have remorse? I do. I have remorse for every animal that was alive that is now dead that's going to end up on my dinner table. I have remorse for every God-given creature that I am taking the life out of. And part of that remorse and part of the difficulty of cleaning it and part of the difficulty of looking at an animal that's whose life you've taken is the understanding that they are doing that for your nourishment and you are doing that for the nourishment of yourself and your family. And I think
we got to go to a break. We're going to break. We'll be right back with Joel Clayfish. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Wrap it up. Here we go. Go dot. Go dot. Go dot. Go dot. Yeah. That's a deer rap. Over and out. Peace. Kids are starving in Japan, so eat it.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest this half hour is Joel Clayfish, who's talking all things hunting. And we just decided that maybe I will go goose hunting with you.
Turkey hunting. Well, you can go goose hunting, too.
But turkey hunting, you said I can still, under the mentorship license.
Yep. Well, and goose hunting, you could do it. It just, it seems for me, when people want to go the very first time, I usually take them turkey hunting.
Okay.
Because that is kind of the best way to show a setup, show the decoy setup, and you have a pretty decent chance of getting one because I scout a lot.
Okay.
And I think I have got about a 95% success rate with turkey hunting when I take people. So it's pretty, and it's also kind of when the turkeys are coming to the decoys, it does make for a little bit of an easier shot than a goose that's coming in and you're shooting it in on the fly. A goose or a turkey is walking on the ground. And then, you know, a weird part of it nobody ever wants to talk about. Like, I have a lot of people, they'll go turkey hunting because they'll say, well, turkeys are ugly, but they won't go rabbit hunting because rabbits are cute. So there, that does really exist in people's minds, certain things that they are comfortable hunting versus things they are not because of the cuteness factor.
What I imagine a little bit because mammals, we're closer, we are mammals as humans. And so if there is the similar experience, and like, I do think that there's a lot of people who have a thing like against birds. They're just like, oh, like birds are just creepy and the movie didn't help.
The
and
movie
they're like,
did not
ah,
help.
There's these little.
And then you've got crows in all the horror movies.
And then you've got the birds aren't real movement.
Yeah, and you've got like TikToks where turkeys are attacking people. And I think that, I do think there is much less love lost between
humans
and human beings. I don't know why that is. But then you have bird people, like cat people. Like there are bird people who love all birds.
Bird feeders are a very big industry.
Bird watching is a big industry.
Yeah.
To go back to the turkeys for just a second, Joel, I heard too that it's really cool to see them when they come down from the trees.
Oh, yes.
Because when you see them on the ground, you don't assume that they can actually get up there without a ladder.
Well, it goes to the old WKRP in Cincinnati saying, I thought turkeys could fly when they're dropping the frozen turkeys out of the helicopter. But a lot of people do not realize that turkeys can fly. And turkeys, the wild turkey, the American wild turkey, especially the type we have here, the breed we have here is called the Eastern Turkey. So there are five breeds across the United States, five major breeds. We've got the Eastern Turkey. There's Osceolas, Rio Grandes, oscillated in Mexico, but they can weigh up to like 32 to even 34, 35 pounds. Now imagine a 32 pound bowling ball flying. And people don't realize they roost in trees. So they sleep at night atop trees. So they literally, like, they get a running start and they fly up into the tree and that's where they roost. And one of the coolest things ever is in the morning, if you're anywhere near the roost and they are flying down into the field, that is one of the most exciting things. Because first of all, they do gobble in the tree. And you might get me to do my gobble on the air. I don't know, Kristen, but
have
we'll
you
see.
Done it on air before on your show?
I'm sure I have on my show before, but when they're gobbling in the trees, it's so exciting because the hair on the back of your neck stands up because you think, well, we might see them or they might come in or we might get one. And when they fly down, it sounds I mean, it sounds like a helicopter crashing because they open their arms to fly out of that tree and they're knocking into all the shrubs and bushes on their way down. I mean, it sounds like a bat out of hell coming down out of the tree, crashing around. But then they'll glide into the field and they look almost, you know, visionary as they glide down into the field. So it is a pretty neat thing to watch.
Oh, I totally want to come with you just to see that.
It's so cool.
And to see them running down a runway like the Wright brothers off a cliff, yeah. It's just priceless.
Well, I mean, if you look, I'm no skinny mini myself, but I don't know the size of wings it would take to get me off the ground. I'll just tell you that. I mean, I can imagine running to the roost and taking off 32 pounds with their little wings. You should just see them. They flap like suckers, too, man. They fly up to the top of the tree. And when they land in the tree, they make that ruckus, too. It's, yeah. And when turkeys are walking through the woods, it is not like a deer. Like, you will not hear a deer. You might hear a twig crackle. But when a turkey's walking through, it is like Brutus chasing Popeye. I mean, it is crashing all the way. You can say, oh, we can hear turkeys coming. It's kind of like wild boars in Florida. You can hear them coming from a mile away, crashing and snorting and grunting.
All right. Well, we only have a couple minutes left with you, and you brought us some
food.
Holy
cow, that fast.
So it goes so fast.
It goes so fast.
It goes so fast. All right. So what are we eating?
All right. Well, this is a wild goose. This was harvested yesterday.
Oh, wow.
And it is my personal recipe. People say, goose is terrible. Oh, goose, it's horrible. It's unbelievable. Well, my family eats more wild goose than we do any other wild game. This was harvested in a field yesterday. It goes into the Instant Pot with my own special recipe, which I've told many times on the air. So it's not really that secret. And then it's shredded, and we add some barbecue sauce to it. And this is one of the most simple ways to make it. When people eat it, they just think it's roast beef.
Like a sloppy Joe.
Like a sloppy Joe with shredded
like
beef.
For people who aren't watching the live stream, it looks like a sloppy Joe.
Yeah. All and right, give it a shot and let me know. She's not afraid either. That was a big bite. That's what I like to see. I'm Italian and I love eaters.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Brooke likes it too.
Brooke likes
Jane,
it too.
Jane, I'll save you the other half.
Okay, great.
Jane, don't be fibbing in there. You better take a bite of it.
I'm a food coward.
Are you?
Oh, but come on. You don't eat a shredded beef barbecue sandwich?
Yeah, I'll try that.
All right.
What's the craziest thing you've ever eaten?
That's exactly what it tastes like. Beaver.
What?
Beaver.
Beaver.
I think beaver's probably the oddest thing I've ever eaten because not too many people cook it after they trap it. You know, they use the pelts and that
type
of thing.
Is it really tough?
I feel like No, it was unbelievable, actually. Really, really delicious. I've eaten that. I've eaten raccoon. I've eaten snake. I wore my alligator boots today from an alligator that I harvested. But Laura? Alligator, yep. I run an alligator hunting outfitter in Florida. So.
Is alligator, what's the most predatory animal that you've hunted? Like as far
the
as they could kill you.
That is a great question. Probably alligator, wild hog, wild boar. When we hunt the wild boars in Florida,
bigger wild boars.
Well, they can get up to 600 pounds. I mean, that's a real giant.
Wow.
But some of the
do they have big horns so that they could like spear you? Is that
they
how they
do
they would
have?
Hurt?
They have cutters and witters that some people call tusks, I guess. But I'm going to show you a picture of one of the wild boars that I
killed. You got to hurry. I got 2 minutes left.
We literally had to move this out with a front end loader. It was so giant.
Oh my. Wow.
Yeah.
I can't even describe it to the people listening, but it is a massive
animal.
Yeah.
One of its legs is about as twice as wide as I am.
What does boar taste like?
Actually, it tastes a lot like domestic pork. It really does. Now, these are Russian boars in Florida. The Spanish brought them over there in the 1600s. And we hunt them, and they still have the genetic code of the Russian boars down there. Long snouts. It's awesome.
All right. Well, that went by so quickly.
Yeah,
I feel like
great.
We probably could have done a whole hour.
I had a great
time. Joel Clayfish, thank you so much for coming
in here.
My
pleasure. It was awesome.
And we'll connect and see if we can make this goose hunting. No, goose. Turkey. Turkey hunting. It's
if you're serious about it, I'll take you.
All right. All right. All right. Raised in Wisco, Thursday nights, 7 p.m. across the Civic Media Network. Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.